C-77. Ford Residence, Birchwood, Colorado. After a long day apart due to Emma and Clark's respective work obligations, Emma brought the trio back together by inviting both of the McCarthy brothers over as soon as she was home. It made sense for them to talk at her house, as she explained. She wasn't very comfortable in the enclosed basement, for starters, and they couldn't risk speaking elsewhere in the McCarthy's house in case Henry overheard anything. Henry himself had spent the day like he spent most others, doing bits and pieces of administrative work for the fire department. He had taken to the desk job easily enough, and certainly far better than Clark had taken to his. Back when a respiratory problem ruled him out of active military duty and ultimately led to his move into high-risk but highly paid private security work with everyone's understanding and best wishes. Since being gravely injured in the act of saving a child from a collision with an oncoming car, Henry had tried to remain philosophical by thinking himself blessed to be doing any kind of work at all after the near-fatal crash left him in a coma for 18 days. "I'd rather be sitting on my ass in this wheelchair than lying on my back in a casket," he sometimes said. "And those are the only choices I've got." At Emma's, the obvious and immediate topic of conversation was Timo Fiori's remarkable and brazen announcement that he intended to launch his own space program based at the old IDA building in Colorado Springs. His proposed reciprocity probe had garnered most of the resulting headlines, partly because the presence of a full-scale model made it feel more real than his future plans for an orbital observation platform and even an intergenerational ark. Dan, despite knowing that much of what everyone else believed to be true was in fact part of a hoax devised by Richard Walker and Hans Kloster, couldn't help but feel excited about the reciprocity probe. He couldn't help but imagine the inhabitants of an alien planet discovering the probe and wondrously examining its contents, largely because he couldn't help but agree with Timo's comment that there might well be multiple intelligent races scattered through the vastness of space. And just because the messenger's race was already aware of humanity, Dan figured, that didn't mean they all were. As well as generating excitement and interest, reciprocity also reignited the dormant debate over the wisdom, or otherwise, of actively trying to communicate with anyone. As the news media's reaction to the Kerguelen bolide underlined, some still feared aliens even in a post-disclosure and post-Salzburg world. Timo's optimistically spoken point about the possibility of there being multiple alien races was turned on its head, with critics arguing that sending instructions on how to reach Earth was foolish and would likely prove fatal if those directions ever fell into the hands of a hostile race. Ever since the existence of one alien race came to light, many had considered it likely that others would follow. And to this day, many still feared that those others could well turn out to be conquest-driven beasts rather than information-sharing allies. The argument was as familiar as it was simple. Just because we know that some aliens are friendly, that doesn't mean they all are. Though Dan had no one to argue with, he quietly understood that the distances involved, particularly relative to the small probe's likely speed of travel, meant that it would take thousands of years for reciprocity to reach another star system. Like the Voyager Golden Records, the real value in the discussions over the messages to be included on reciprocity's plaques was the value of such discussions as a frame for useful thought experiments and as a means of bringing people together. For much of the long day, Dan had been so caught up in the excited reaction to the reciprocity announcement that he temporarily postponed his own theorizing over the meaning of the Kerguelen bolide. He was surprised that Godfrey still hadn't said anything outside of one short overnight radio interview, either about the bolide or about Timo. But it was not a disappointed kind of surprise. "There's something I've been thinking about," he said to Emma after a general discussion of the day's events. "You're going to be with Timo in a few days, so what if we tell him some of the truth without telling him anything about the lie? He talked about looking for new Kerguelen, and there are two things we know that could really narrow the search parameters. The first thing is that the messengers could walk and breathe without suits in an environment where we could do the same, which tells us certain things about the kind of environment they evolved in. And the second thing? The main thing is that they told me we have a name for their home star, but not for their home planet." If we told Timo that I met the messengers... Clark responded first, with some general obscenities coloring his disbelief at Dan's suggestion. Emma raised a finger to ask him to be quiet. Dan, she said, I thought we were on the same page about this. We are. I didn't say we should say anything about the hoax. Just that we could maybe tell Timo that we met aliens and that they told us a few things. And I said Timo, okay? Not everyone. Not Cole or Godfrey or anyone else. Not even Billy or my dad. Timo. He's the only guy who could take the info we have and act on it in a positive way. What even makes you think they'd let you tell him? Emma asked. They told us they'd interfere if Walker tried to talk. Exactly. They didn't say they'd interfere if I did. Because we didn't ask, Dan. We weren't stupid enough to be thinking about that. Just listen to me for 1 minute, okay? Because as soon as any part of this is out, it's all out. Don't kid yourself on that. And the second you told someone, you would wish you hadn't. This thing is a weight we have to bear. We didn't ask for it, but we've sure as hell got it. And if you told someone, you would immediately realize that the weight wasn't lifted, it was just dumped onto them too. Do you think this would be more difficult for the two of us if Clark didn't know? Do you think this would be easier for the three of us if your dad knew? No. It would just be equally as difficult for more people, and you would never sleep again because you'd be worried that they would spill it. We can trust ourselves and we can trust each other, and that's it. That's all. Okay? Okay, Dan said quite brightly. Emma raised her eyebrows. Dan, I said okay, no big deal. Well, it kind of is, which is why I need you to promise. I need you to promise me that you're going to stop thinking about this. Can you do that? I promise. Emma turned to Clark. Are you happy with that? Do I look happy with that? He groaned. In turn, he looked at Dan. I swear to God, man, if I hear you talking about any shit like that again, you'll wish I hadn't. Jesus, Dan sighed. Last night you say nothing is off the table, no judgment, say whatever you think. Then today, Timo makes a big announcement, and I have an idea directly related to that, so I say it. I say it to the two of you, in here, in private, and now suddenly it's like judgment, judgment, judgment. I didn't say I'm gonna tell him, did I? I said, what if we did? But Emma said no, so that's it. You don't need to be such an asshole. You think this is me being an asshole? Clark asked. Then you really don't want to see what happens if I hear you suggesting anything like that again. Emma butted in. Clark, that's enough. No, it's not. If someone has an idea as stupid as that, you call it out. If you don't, you're just encouraging him to have more stupid ideas.
If he has ideas, I want to hear them, Emma said. Whether you think they're stupid or not, if he's going to have them, I want to know what they are. You want to just leave everything stewing in his head? You want him to tell someone else because we don't listen and the thoughts drive him crazy?
I am standing right here, Dan said. Emma put her hand around his back and rested it on his shoulder. I know, sorry, but Clark, cut him some slack. However hard this is for us, we're not the ones who felt physical pain when the meteor came in, and we're not the ones who got called to the cornfield last time, okay? Stuff like that changes your perspective, so when Dan has an idea, he can tell us, without judgment.
Clark paused, then closed his eyes for a second and nodded slowly. I'm sorry too, man, but at the same time, try and see it from my side. If you were me and I was suggesting something like that, I'd probably lock you in the basement with no computer and no phone line, Dan said, laughing as he spoke. Emma lowered her hand from Dan's shoulder after suddenly noticing that it was still there.
Don't give him any ideas, Dan.
Anyway, I've got an early shift tomorrow, Clark said, clapping his hands together. Dan, you coming? Dan nodded, then turned to Emma.
What are you doing tomorrow? Do you need to go into the city again for work?
No, that was a one-time thing. Campaign emergency averted. Actually, I might have to go into the city to pick up a little something for your birthday next week, but that's it. Apart from that, I'll just be working from home, and I don't have much booked in. Why? What about you?
Dan shrugged. I'll see what comes up.
Cool. Well, I'll probably catch you sometime tomorrow, right?
Definitely, Dan said. See you later.
As Dan walked to the door, Emma pulled Clark back, very subtly.
Be nice to him, she mouthed.
She was smiling, but Clark wasn't.
The softer you get, the more I have to overcompensate. He whispered, "Don't make this more difficult than it already is." He was gone before she could reply.